Nathaniel Johnson is someone who thinks a lot about how people interact with animals. It's usually with a knife and fork. Johnson writes about food at the online environmental news site Grist. But right now, he's got wildlife on his mind, and in his new book, Unseen City. It's about some of the animals that live among us, and we don't really notice or appreciate, from pigeons to snails. I got a chance to talk with him about the book and started by asking what he learned by writing about one of the most ubiquitous rodents in cities, squirrels.
One thing that I thought was really fascinating was the history, that squirrels weren't in cities until people worked really hard to introduce them to cities. There was this whole city beautiful movement, these promoters of cities that wanted to have young boys and girls feeding them out of their hands in the parks. It failed for the first few times. They just couldn't get it right. And it really kept failing until the style of parks changed from the neoclassical austere parks with one tree over here perfectly groomed and another tree over there to the Frederick Law Olmsted more naturalistic style that kind of mimicked the habitat that squirrels needed.
This book has a co-creator in a way. It's your young daughter, Josephine, who was constantly asking you, what's that? And so you had to come up with some answers for her. How did looking at these plants and animals alongside, I think she was a toddler then, help you see and appreciate the species that you were looking at?
Well, toddlers are naturally good at this. They have fresh eyes, unlike adults that learn not to see things. And we learn not to see things for very good reasons. We filter out the things that aren't useful for us to survive on a daily basis or pay the rent or find the next person that we're going to date or whatever it is. So she was seeing the world in this fresh way, and she was forcing me to see the world in this fresh way because she would get annoyingly distracted by something gross in the gutter, and I would have to go grab her hand and pull her along. And when I did that, sometimes, you know, I'd stop and look at what she was looking at. And a lot of the time, it would be something fascinating that I'd never seen before that she discovered. And so that gave me the motivation to search out the story of those creatures that she was finding.
At one point in the book, you describe a scene where you and your daughter are watching a beetle in your yard, and you ask her what she thinks it is, and she says, she comes up with what's probably an imagined or maybe made up word.
Right.
I think it's orchises. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah. I think you're safe in however you pronounce that.
But then you say, well, you know what? She actually might be right because there are so many unknowns about a lot of the species that you write about. And
she may have just named a new genus,
right,
for all I know.
And the answers to some of your questions in the book are we don't know. Did that surprise you?
Yeah. I was sort of expecting that, you know, in this backyard field station that I staked out, you know, there would be no undiscovered territory, but there are just so many mysteries, and there's so, you know, you don't have to push very far before you come to a question mark. There's a recent citizen science project where people were trapping flies, and they found a bunch of new species of flies that nobody had identified before in downtown LA. Or, you know, just trying to figure out how squirrels remember where to dig up their nuts that they've stored underground. These are still mysteries that scientists are working on.
You were talking about the role of people, and another theme that runs through the book is that, you know, wildlife lives in kind of a parallel world, a world alongside of our world that we sometimes don't notice. And yet so often people create the conditions that impact how plants and animals thrive and how we ultimately interact with wildlife. And I'm actually thinking about your chapter on crows. We've made it very convenient for crows to eat and for their numbers to grow in cities. And you spoke with a researcher who'd like to sort of make that relationship more reciprocal. What does that mean?
With all of these species, you know, oftentimes we think of nature as just being static. You know, it's this thing that's out there. But of course, it's just the opposite. It's incredibly dynamic. It's always changing, and it's always adapting to us. So crows are constantly changing their habits and evolving to better thrive alongside of us. One of these people that I talked to, Josh Klein, has been thinking a lot about this and saying, you know, if we don't watch out, these species are going to simply become parasites. And we have to make this a reciprocal relationship. We have to adapt to them as well and make this more of a mutually beneficial relationship. His idea with crows is to create a sort of vending machine. And so he built this crow box, basically, which dispenses peanuts in exchange for coins. And he found that he could teach crows to find coins on the sidewalk and deposit them in this box and in return for peanuts. And so this is just kind of silly concept, but he'd like to see similar or other crazy ideas applied to the other species, the deer, the turkeys, the raccoons that are becoming more and more abundant all around humans.
I love the descriptions of the crows that you use. They're humorous, they're funny, and they're kind of like interesting companions in the way we live our lives in cities and suburbs.
They're incredibly smart. They're skeptical. They're watching us always. Crows were really hard for me to observe because as soon as you stop and start looking at a crow, they'll get really nervous. You're like, why is this human paying so much attention to me? And they harbor grudges and play tricks on humans all of the time, you know, stealing our food and then coming back to throw the empty container at us later.
There's lots of great descriptions in your book. I'm thinking also about when you kind of guiltily put an ant in a jar to study it. You know, you say, I followed the curve of the head, found the antennae mounted where you'd expect a nose, and to each side a black, multifaceted eye that was perfectly symmetrical as if shaped by a jeweler from Jet. And then you say, I felt a shiver of delight. I felt richer for having seen it. So could you talk a little bit about that feeling of sort of discovery that you had about looking more closely, in this case, very closely under a magnifying glass at some of these species?
I'd realized that I'd never seen the eye of an ant before. You know, I've seen hundreds, thousands of ants, but never really looked closely enough to see its eye. And it's this kind of wonderful thing that was right there. And so I had this experience over and over again with all sorts of creatures, and not always through a magnifying glass, like the eye of a pigeon. They have this amazing, shockingly bright red-orange eye, which was just sort of boggling to me, that, you know, it's like the eye of Sauron. It's sort of flame-like. and I'd never noticed this before. So I think there's lots of things like that now I'm able to see. And like I say, it does feel as if my life is a little richer for it.
In what way does that make you feel richer?
Every time I see an ant now, instead of just seeing like ant, you know, anonymous, generic creature that's this kind of cardboard cutout that I then go on to smash or ignore, I've had this experience of seeing it closely and realizing that there's something beautiful there. And that moment is triggered, I think, every time I see an ant. And so there's just this kind of layer of aesthetic depth. You know, the world is simply a more beautiful place now that I have all of these triggers of memory and snatches of story that go off for me when I walk to the bus stop in the morning or bike to work.
What are you looking at more closely in your yard or your neighborhood now? Do you have a mystery that you're solving?
I walk my kids to daycare every morning, and there's a tree that I pass every single day, and I've been watching it, and it looked like it was totally dead over the winter, and it's kind of broken off and stunted, and there was this huge fruiting body of a fungus coming out of it. And so I was thinking, this thing is really shot. And then as I watched, the leaves started to form, and I was watching the fungus, and I saw these little white things starting to, like hairs starting to appear out of the branches. And I thought, oh my gosh, this fungus is taking over the tree completely. But then over the next couple of days, I looked more closely at those and brought my magnifying glass, and I realized that they weren't the fungus appearing out of the tree. They were these tiny little white flies that were growing on this branch. Then they got bigger and bigger, and they're these fuzzy little white flies. So there's like half a dozen little mysteries there for me to try and solve.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Nathaniel Johnson is author of the book Unseen City: The Majesty of Pigeons, The Discreet Charm of Snails, and Other Wonders of the Urban Wilderness. I'm Carol Holsapple. This is the Allegheny Front.